haven't met before, hey, I'm Zach, and welcome to my existential crisis. I have spent my entire career making a living as a creative, and like you, I'm wondering what the future holds for all of us. I may not have all the answers, but few are more dedicated to helping you find them than I am. Come join me as I have candid conversations with some of the world's most interesting people to explore what truly matters in life while making sense of our messy creative minds along the way. No matter the challenges you might be navigating, you always have a safe space here with me. I'm sure you've been reading every single word and listening to every single word in my recent essay series on Substack, all about our relationship with technology, our relationship with the algorithms, and even setting rules, boundaries, and guardrails around our use of smartphones. But if you're anything like Julie, who I'm doing my hot seat today with, you're wondering, what the hell am I supposed to be doing with my time? And when I do find something else to do with my time, why the hell can't I focus for more than 15 seconds? Well, guess what? There's a very specific reason on a neural level why if you decide to remove your smartphone, social media, TikTok scrolling, and otherwise, you find you have a really hard time focusing, whether it's reading, whether it's writing, whether it's doing creative work. Today, I'm going to talk all about that and more with Julie, who after our session even sent me a message and said, oh my God, I chose 35 minutes in my life with no agenda, and I spent that entire time blissfully pouring out my new phone rules into a notebook. Why? Because I gave her the action step, create boredom. So if you too would like to know a little bit more about why it is so hard to focus nowadays, how we change our relationship with the algorithms and technology, and how we create more space for boredom, well, then look no further than today's Hot Seat Friday with Julie Farbaugh. Now, if you've been following along, you may be asking, well, didn't she just do a Hot Seat Friday? Well, another thing I want to make sure you're aware of is that in the Arnold Academy for Creatives, it just isn't about do one quick session, I need some tactical help, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and you're out. This is about going on a journey. This is about doing multiple sessions, really digging deep into all of these problems and going far beyond the three-step listicles that are everywhere online in the blogs and all of the videos that are less than 60 seconds that promise to change everything about your life overnight. So yes, I did just do a Hot Seat Friday with Julie. This is a follow-up. And if you haven't listened to the previous, I actually suggest you listen to that one first, because this is the next chapter in Julie's story about changing her relationship with her smartphone.
Hello.
Good to see you back as always.
Yeah. Happy to be here. Loving the articles. I've always loved your writing, but
I appreciate that.
It's just been next level. So
yeah. Well, I think it's because I've stopped caring.
Well, it's working.
And I don't mean to like stop caring about my students or stop caring about other people. I've just stopped giving a shit about whether or not anybody likes what I'm writing and whether or not, well, have I structured it properly? Am I using the right keywords to get good SEO? Is this the kind of thing the algorithm is going to pick up? I just don't give a shit anymore. I just don't care. And oftentimes you read that the paradox of success and happiness and otherwise, all of those things start to happen magically when you don't give a shit about them and you don't actively work towards them. And I just stopped giving a shit about what I'm writing and whether or not it's going to resonate, whether or not it's going to be picked up by search engines, algorithms, or otherwise. And the funny thing is that I'm already noticing that it's starting to resonate with a lot more people because of that, which is totally not my intention. It was just, I'm just going to start writing all the random shit that's in my head that I can't get out of my head. And the only way to get it out of my head is to write it and put it out there. So
yeah, well, let's
buckle up.
Sweet. To put this in my career's language, they used to say the highest vibration we could hit as a human was gratitude, because everything's a frequency. We're always at a frequency and that will shift. Are we super happy? Are we super depressed? It's a literal different scientific vibration. Mm-hmm. But they did a lot of studies and they tracked that actually the highest vibration you can hit is authenticity.
Mm.
So you're just being authentic.
Yeah, and that's it. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, it not only just works better because you're at your highest self, it allows the right people to align with you in your own way.
Yes, exactly. This is something we don't talk about vibrations, but we talk about defining our key values and then really narrowing down those key values to no more than three core values. This is something that we work on in both the Focus Accelerator and the Mastermind. And of course, I have to go through all these exercises myself because I want to be the first one that's going through the trenches to see whether or not there's an exit on the other side. And what I found for me is that my three core values are creativity, authenticity, and presence.
Sweet.
So if I'm not doing something that requires some form of creativity and putting something out into the world that didn't exist otherwise, I really don't see the point of being around and like doing anything. And if I'm doing something that doesn't feel authentic to myself, like I just get this just feeling inside like something's not right here. You had a front row seat of that for an entire year of me trying to figure out the Instagram algorithm. And every second of that was absolute hell. And I'm like, yeah, no, this just isn't me. And then presence. Like, I just don't see the point of doing something or more importantly, being around somebody if I'm not present. So yes, yeah. Authenticity was one of those three core values that when I'm not aligned with authenticity, I just don't feel right. My health suffers, my mental health suffers, even my sleep suffers. So yeah, now that I just don't give a shit, it's all coming together. So good advice for everybody else. But having said all of that, how can I be helpful to you today?
Well, there's kind of a blend of the two discussions going on. One was just my description of the need for this hot seat, which is not to put myself down or use language that's rude in any way to myself or anyone else, but I just kind of feel like I'm becoming stupid.
Isn't it funny how we say things like, you know, I don't mean any disrespect, but you're a fucking piece of shit, right? We always frame it that way. Like, I don't mean to be rude, but get the fuck out of my way. Like, we always frame it that way and it's the opposite. So you're like, yeah, I don't want to put myself down, but I'm becoming stupid. Like, what?
Well, I don't even mean it in a bad way, but it's to the extent where just my cognitive functioning isn't firing on all cylinders. So I've been open about it. Speaking of authenticity with people, when I'm in conversation, I'll pause a lot and I'll say, I apologize. In here, crystal clear, I can't get that out to you. So that's just where I'm at right now. The other conversation happening was in Substack after your latest, greatest article, where I was just saying, why I'm reaching for my phone. There's these distractions. It's like, well, I have all this kind of energy and anxiety, I would say, to take action, but I don't know what on. And so it's like, well, I have to accomplish some kind of task. Let me just go to my emails now that I don't have social media and delete something, which, by the way, are never yours, to clarify that.
which, by the way, can't be because I'm not on social media anymore.
Oh, I mean with your emails.
Oh, with emails. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm seeing a blend of these worlds where, you know, one downside, which is a great upside, of removing your time from your phone or at least social media is you have more of presence, as you're saying. Mm-hmm. And so all this shit comes to the surface. And I'm realizing, I think that's what's happening. This lack of clarity with my next step in the career mixed with my inability to really use my brain to, let's say I want to write more. I'm like, how? Mm-hmm. You know? I think it's coming from this survival mode that's a little activated and wanting to know the next phase of my career, wanting to have the cognitive ability there. Yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
Gotcha. I'm going to dive into both sides of this conversation, but I'll lead with a question. Do you think it's a coincidence that you're running into all of these things shortly after deciding to get rid of Instagram?
Well, I guess no, on two levels. One is my brain has space. It's like, well, what do I do with that? And the other is with Facebook, there is a fear like, dang, that's how I did build a lot of my clientele. I don't need it anymore because they're here. But if I do a big shift, like, oh no, it's kicked up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So no coincidence.
So let's look at the first part of this. I want to begin with a mindset shift. I want to begin with a reframe. You know me, it's always about mindset. Mm-hmm. I can talk about tactics all day long and tools. I can strategize. But if you don't have the right mindset, there is no point. So we're going to start with this mindset. And I know that you were joking, half joking, but language is really important. You know that just as much as I do. Yeah. And you said, I am becoming stupid.
Mm.
Is that a fixed mindset or is that a growth mindset?
That's pretty fixed.
That's a very fixed mindset, right? I'm becoming stupid versus I'm currently struggling to come up with ideas. I'm currently struggling to remember dates and names. Mm-hmm. I'm currently struggling to take all these ideas in my head and be able to communicate them out loud. Mm-hmm. You see the difference between these two?
Huge difference.
If you're becoming stupid, I can't really help you.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot I can do because I can give you all the strategies, tactics, and tools in the world. But if you genuinely believe you're dumb, you're just never going to be able to do any of these things because you're always going to hit the wall of, well, I mean, I could try this whole deep work thing or I could try writing, but I don't know. I'm kind of a dumb person. I don't really know if I can do this. This isn't for me.
Mm. Yeah, I don't want that.
Yeah, which by the way, you're not dumb. You're incredibly bright, incredibly creative, incredibly intuitive. So you as a person don't possess any of these traits inherently of stupidity or lack of intelligence. But what I'm surmising is that because you have now eliminated a major distraction in your life, and by the way, a major distraction that literally rewires your neurons, now that you have more of this space, you're like, oh God, like I just feel kind of distracted and all over the place. And like, I can't hold a coherent thought that I can't focus.
Yeah.
Again, do you think it's any coincidence that you just spent years attached to or even addicted to Instagram and now you remove that and now you feel scatterbrained and all over the place?
This is making so much sense because it's like the pattern of my brain is used to constant change, constant go. Mm-hmm. Like if you scroll videos, if it's over 15 seconds, sorry, over it. That makes a lot of sense because my brain's still there, but I've taken it to the present moment and it's
exactly.
What was the term you used? I think it was, you said Natalie that just.
Tweaking. Oh yeah. She was literally tweaking. When I talked to Natalie, who's been a member of my team, she's been my assistant on and off for almost 20 years now. And she's in my mastermind group. I talked to her a few days after she had deleted Instagram and she literally was like, I can't figure out what to do with my days. I'm like, you're literally tweaking right now. Like short of doing this, you're literally tweaking from Instagram withdrawal. And we laugh, but on a neural level, it's very, very true. Your neurons have been rewired to constantly need a dopamine fix where you're like, if it's longer than 15 seconds, I can't. Yeah. So now you've removed this and you have all of this space, but your brain is not in cognitive shape to be able to settle itself. Think right. for longer periods, and then also communicate those ideas. That takes a much higher level of cognitive fitness than this. Oh, that's funny. Oh my God, I need to share this. Oh my God, this balloon, it like fell, this guy threw a balloon on his wife with like whipped cream. Oh my God, this is so, kitchen hack. Ooh, I definitely have to try this. Like, of course you can't construct an idea for an hour at a time and communicate it.
Yeah.
Right. But that doesn't mean you're stupid. It just means that you're cognitively out of shape.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go to Spartan Racing because that's really how you and I got to know each other originally. Right. You came to one of my fitness and post groups and the rest is history. And look at what the hell has happened to you. So let's say that you had a serious injury to, you know, a leg, knee, whatever it is. And you were bedridden for 6 months. Now you've decided you want to get in shape for another Spartan race. You've successfully run Spartan Supers, 10Ks, like you've gone through and you've just conquered those. But now you're hobbling around the block. Mm-hmm. Is it, I'm not a strong person anymore, or I'm currently weak and I need to rebuild my strength?
Yeah, currently.
You're still a strong person. You're still a highly intelligent, highly creative person, but your cognitive fitness is in the shitter.
Yeah.
This is what social media does to our brains. Now imagine how much stupider you'd be if you had been on TikTok.
Oh, very true.
TikTok is the fentanyl laced heroin of social media. It does not get worse than TikTok, but I'm pretty sure that OpenAI Sora is going to be vying for that crown. If it even lasts, I'm not even sure it's going to last. I think it's going to be one of those things that flames out. I really hope. But TikTok is. Sora is basically TikTok, but with AI generated clips. So you can basically generate anything. So an example would be, you can have Bob Ross sword fighting with a grizzly bear. I think there is actually one of those floating around. There was a video that was, and by the way, not because I follow them, like, yes, I installed the app and I played with it for 15 minutes, so I knew what the fuck it was. And I needed a shower afterwards and I deleted it. I'm like, I want all memory of this gone. But like, somebody made a video that went viral on Sora of Stephen Hawking going on a diving board and trying to do a dive and then just going into the water and drowning. Like, that's the kind of shit that's floating around on social media because of AI. The point being, the things like TikTok are here to stay and it's only going to get worse. So basically, you're in a position where your cognitive fitness is really poor and you're really out of shape. But you're still a highly intelligent, highly creative person. You just need a cognitive fitness plan so you can start to get smarter again.
Yeah, I love that.
So now we come to the second part of the conversation, which is because of all of these distractions and this inability to be able to sit down and focus for longer periods of time. And also, by the way, I think that this is not only something that's important in our lives. I think we need to start considering this as a skill. And I have not heard anybody look at it from this perspective yet, but I think boredom is a skill. I think boredom is absolutely necessary to the creative process. And I'm very intentional about having boredom in my life to the point now where I protect the boredom so fiercely that it's just like a bubble around it. Right. But I don't think it's really looked at as a skill and something that could actually be developed. I think you could get better at boredom. And boredom is the lack of any stimulation whatsoever in which you just allow yourself to be uncomfortable with not knowing what to do next, not knowing how to formulate the ideas in your head, and then taking that bottleneck and being able to communicate it in some way. So now all of a sudden, the boredom leads to something else. That to me is, I believe, a core part of cognitive fitness is not only allowing boredom in your life, but getting better at being bored and using that boredom in some way, even if it's just to be more present with your feelings and your body and your vibrations, right? But once you get a little bit better with that, what happens is now you get a little bit more clarity of what you should be working on next. If you have some sense of what are my goals, what's the purpose behind those goals, and what's the vision for me for the next phase of work in life. Mm-hmm. So right now, I think it's a combination of you're just not good at being able to sit with those thoughts and have executive function and prioritize because, oh shit, I need to think of the next thing to do. Oh my God, this is just the funniest thing ever. This guy just got hit in the balls. Wait, what was my purpose again? Oh God, I don't know what my purpose is. Oh my God, seriously? You voted for this person? No. Oh, they have to know my feelings on this. You don't give yourself enough space to sit with a difficult question. What the fuck am I doing here?
Yeah.
And I think you know that. I think the spectrum of I have no idea what to do with my life and the opposite end of the spectrum of I'm doing exactly what I meant to be doing. You're pretty far on that extreme end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a matter of I don't really know what to do with my time. Who am I without my job as an assistant editor in television, which is like three past lives for you at this point.
Yeah.
So I think for you, it's probably a lack of cognitive fitness, and that cognitive fitness is leading to a bottleneck of I could be doing so many things, but I'm not really which ones I should be doing next because your brain's just not used to settling in and buckling down and saying, all right, this is what we're focused on today, this week, this month, this year.
Yeah. That's absolutely perfect.
And then there's another layer to this. And I don't think this is what you're experiencing, but you can tell me if you are. There's first that I have no idea what it is that I should be doing with my time or with my life. Then it's, well, I kind of know what I should be doing, but I don't believe I can do it. Then there's, I do believe I can do it, but I don't know how to do it. So it's that fear of, I don't know how to do this next thing. And it's scary. And when I'm in learning mode and not performance mode, that means I'm going to fail. I'm going to bumble. So I don't think for you, it's what should I be doing? Maybe it's what should I be doing this week? Like, I think there's an executive functioning prioritization component to it. Mm-hmm. But if it's a matter of I have these five things and I can narrow it down to the one thing, do you feel confident that this is the thing that I should be doing bigger picture? And if so, are you afraid of doing it? Which of these components resonates when you're thinking, I'm kind of all over the place?
I don't have fear of taking action in terms of failure. I feel like that has blissfully gone away. Where I do feel a little stuck is I can tell the next layer of my career is going to most likely be a lot more collaborative, working with other people or companies. And so I'm super excited about that, where it's not all just on me, but I don't quite know what that looks like. I have a few people I have ideas with, you know, one in particular, we're going to sit and kind of brainstorm. But that's not only kind of a, I've never done that before, but it's also a little bit scary. Not only is that, you know, it's not just up to me anymore. I'm totally fine. If I fail and ruin something, I'll figure it out, do something else. But to collaborate with another person or company, it's just unknown territory. And it's also financially scary. Like, well, wait, if I hold a retreat, I kind of want all that income. I don't want to split it. You know, if I'm going to do all that effort. But so it's just getting past a lot of those initial walls and barriers I have around opening up to work more with other people.
So when you started by saying, I don't really have any fears of failures or any of this, and then you talked all about the things that are scary to you with working with other people, those sound like very different things to me.
Say more on that.
Right. So you said, well, I'm not really afraid of failing, not really, really afraid of taking action. But then you told me how you're scared of working with other people and doing things that you don't really know how to do yet. It sounds to me like you are afraid of taking action.
Yeah, well, good clarification. There's fear of taking action. There's not fear of a failure, at least within myself on my own. There's fear of taking action with others, but there is fear of failing with other people. And it's like,
there it is.
Yeah.
As a recovering obliger. Could maybe part of this be that with what you've been doing so far, the only person that falls flat on their face is you?
Yeah.
But as somebody who's always gone above and beyond to meet other people's needs, even to your own detriment, I mean, really, one of your core things that you're so good at is helping other people understand their boundaries so they can better communicate them. And we always gravitate to teaching the things that we need ourselves the most.
Right.
So is there perhaps a fear of, well, once I start working with other people, now I have to commit to other people, and now there are going to be external expectations on me. And now I go back to this world of having to deal with all these challenges around working with others, boundaries, expectations, and otherwise.
You know, you have a gift, my friend. I never really connected with that, but that is absolutely the root of it, that when I work with other people, they're going to maybe have their own ideas. I might hate it. I might love it. I don't know. It's so much easier to know what I'm into and to do that than to balance what someone else might want, and having to place boundaries, dealing with the times I didn't place a boundary, all of that. Yeah.
All right. So there we go. We got to the center of the Tootsie Roll in about 15 minutes. I'm going to add another component to this because this is an area where I'm putting a lot of my attention behind the scenes, of which that attention will be outwards with all of you. I find that usually it's a lead time of about 3 to 6 months that whatever I'm like actively doing behind the scenes, you guys end up seeing. Like, I was really into the psychology of phones and distractions and all this like 3 to 6 months ago, and still am. But what I'm really getting into now is the psychology of introversion. And I think in addition to the component of, well, I'm very much a recovering obliger, I struggle to set boundaries, now I'm going to be collaborating with others, now there are going to be external expectations, what if we don't agree, but I'm always the kind of person that pleases everybody else. You're also very much an introvert. And introverts struggle with team collaborations.
Yeah.
This is actually, I had this conversation totally coincidentally with my family in the car home from dinner on Saturday. Because my son is very much like my wife, very much a collaborator. I think he's an ambivert. There are parts of him for me that are introverted. There are, like, my wife is 0% introvert. She's 100% extrovert. As introverted as I am, that's how extroverted she is. Like, if she isn't doing something with other people 5 to 6 days a week, she loses her mind. I'm the opposite. If I do something with people once a month, I need a month to recover. But having said that, we were talking about group projects because a group project came up. And my son was, like this, that, and the other thing. And my daughter's like, oh, I hate group projects. I'm like, yeah, you're definitely my daughter. Yeah. And we talked about this idea that the world is designed for extroverted people. And there's actually tons of research that backs this up, that our identities, our success, careers, everything about the way that our current society is structured is what's called the cult of personality, and success is connected with being extroverted. Mm-hmm. You're not an extroverted person. Yeah. You can fool people like I can fool people, but I see through you because it takes one to know one. I literally got an email from somebody last week in response to a newsletter saying, oh, I really appreciated this article. Da, da, da. But by the way, I got to call you out on something. You are not an introvert anymore. I was like, whoa, this is interesting. Yeah. There's no such thing as you can or cannot be an introvert or extrovert for a certain period of time and not another period of time. It is a core component of our personality. It's like our eye color. Except you can't wear extroverted contact lenses to change it. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, when it comes to now collaborating with others, knowing that those collaborations with the work you're doing relates to doing in-person workshops, teaching masterclasses, and otherwise, does any of this fear relate to your highly introverted nature?
Yeah, it does, because I'm automatically recognizing, well, first of all, I don't like the collaborative team effort work either. So that helps me know we're on the right topic. I really like, for example, if there's a retreat being held and I speak at it, as you know, I like that. I like the idea of, well, I have a retreat and I have other people coming to speak at it. That sounds cool. It's the, I'm working with one or multiple other people to create a retreat together. That's where I'm like, oh shit. I don't know about that experience. So I'm talking with one person now about doing that. She's actually an aunt of mine that has some business around town. So it would be a good fit. But she had mentioned just yesterday, I met this other woman. She's fantastic. She wants to do the retreat with us. And I felt that wall just boom. Because it's like, I
shuddered for you.
Yeah, you felt that too.
Ooh, yes.
So it could be an opportunity. Hey, boundaries to say, I fully want to do this with you. Can we have her as a guest, you know, and not a collaborative person? Yeah. So it's just going to take a bit of my own work that I tell other people about.
Yeah. So I want to dig into this just like a tiny layer deeper, and then we'll have to eventually transition to another hot seat. But I could easily do this for 2 hours. So this is going to be semi-hypothetical, but not totally hypothetical. I've had you speak as a guest at my retreats. And like many introverts, you are an excellent public speaker, excellent orator, because oftentimes introverts, they get that need to communicate out when they're put on the stage. So actually some of the best leaders in the world, some of the best public speakers in the world are very, very introverted. It's actually a very common trait of people that are introverts. So now I want to put a semi-hypothetical situation in front of you. What if I wanted to collaborate with you on a retreat? So you and I build a retreat together. How do you feel about that versus come speak at my retreat and I'll pay you money?
See, that feels fantastic to me. So I'm getting
surprised. That's what I want to know. I want to know why you feel differently.
I know your brain clearly. We're on the same page. I feel like then it's easy. It's like, it just feels simple. Like, yeah, we get each other. We would know it works, you know?
What are you not afraid of collaborating on a retreat with me that you're afraid of collaborating on a retreat with others?
Someone else just being out of alignment with the way I think and feel. They annoy the shit out of me. I'm like, oh my God, they have to send 10 emails a day. They're over harping. Their ideas aren't good. It's just like, I'm not enjoying their personality or their way of working. And also with you, I'd feel comfortable saying like, I don't really like that idea. Like, what about this, you know, with someone else that far off? I don't even know where I'd start.
Do you have any fear that if you and I were to collaborate together 50-50 on building a retreat, that I'm going to lead you to do anything that's in misalignment with you being authentic with yourself?
No.
Do you have that fear collaborating with others?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I'm going to end up doing this retreat that has annoyed me the entire time we built it. Yeah.
So there you go.
Boy, this is great. Love it.
So what do we do with this?
Well, my first action is to really look at how can I build my cognitive fitness, you know, sit in the present a little bit more. I don't want to say peacefully, because sometimes it might mean like, hey, I need to move or something.
Yeah, well, it's rarely peaceful, especially when you're highly creative.
Yeah, and maybe start, you know, every day, whether it's writing or whatever, just start to try and extend a task using my mind beyond 15 seconds.
Yeah.
The other piece is really looking at what do I want to expand into? Who are the people? And if it's not the right fit, trusting myself to discern and voice it and not end up in situations I just don't need to be in.
Mm-hmm. And something tells me these two things are not going to be mutually exclusive, that if you give yourself a little bit more space in the quiet, in the boredom, which is anything but peaceful, you might find more awareness with why you don't want to be a part of these and what are the criteria that make them opportunities instead of distractions.
Yeah.
So you can be clear about how to communicate your boundaries.
Very true.
Here's what I would suggest. Okay. I would suggest that you schedule a date with you and a pen and a notebook.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And you choose whatever time feels uncomfortable but doable. If you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, I can do 15 minutes, great, do 30. Like 30 minutes, there's no fucking way. Great, okay, then do 20, 25. But if it's like, oh, yeah, I can do 15 minutes, not enough. I want you to find the most uncomfortable version of what you can do. My poor Spartans are like, oh my God, he never shuts up about this. This is what I said to all of them on Sunday. Man, did we do a gauntlet on Sunday. Have you ever done the College of the Canyons in Santa Clarita? That basically, it literally has a full police academy obstacle course. And we were doing a police academy obstacle course.
The jealousy FOMO meter just went off.
We should now start a new club within the academy, Masochists Anonymous, because you clearly have the same level of masochism that I do. But I kept saying to my students who have really widely varying levels of skill, strength, difficulty, and otherwise, but I say the same thing to all of them, find the hardest version of what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So with this, I want you to find the hardest version of boredom that you can do where it's nothing more than you and a pen and paper.
Yeah.
Okay. And see what happens.
I can already feel the discomfort. So thank you.
Good. So yes, find that discomfort and see what happens. And I think a few things might percolate.
Yeah. Awesome. This has been the best. I feel like that every time, every hot seat. This was the best one.
Well, keep coming back.
I will.
All right. Thank you, Julie. Great conversation.